First children are being separated from their parents when families illegally cross the U.S. border. Under the policy, parents can be held by ICE agents and their children can be sent to youth shelters. Administration officials have argued they're simply upholding the law as it stands now, but detractors say it's a method of intimidation and a way to deter people from entering the country, even if they're seeking asylum. Our next guest is here to talk about the precedent for the policy, the legality of the practice, and what it says about the American approach to immigration. Elise Cohen is an assistant professor of political science at UW-Sheboygan and UW-Manitowoc. Elise, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much. Great to be with you.
Now, as I understand it, this specifically isn't a policy that says we will separate parents from children, but that's in effect what's going on at the border as more people are charged with trying to enter the country illegally. Can you talk about how this is working out this year?
Yeah, you're exactly right, Rob. It's being framed as a zero-tolerance policy, meaning for immigrants who cross the border illegally, from this point forward, the Trump administration says they will be criminally prosecuting 100% of those illegal border crossing cases. So you're right that it's not being framed as a family separation policy. At the same time, I think the reason it's getting a lot of attention for that aspect is we've had several Trump administration officials, including the White House Chief of Staff, John Kelly, including Attorney General Jeff Sessions, talk about deterrence and how this is really sort of geared at people that may be thinking about crossing the border illegally. Attorney General Sessions said, if you don't want your child separated, don't take them across the border illegally.
And in practice, how is that working? When a kid is separated from their parents as they cross the border, where does the child go?
Yeah, so the initial step would be removing the child from the family or the adults that were accompanying them on the border. They then have about 2 days to transfer them from the ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, to the Department of Health and Human Services. Often the Office of Refugee Resettlement will take custody of the children. They usually will then be taken to shelters. A lot of the shelters are run by nonprofit, non-governmental organizations. But there's really no way, once the children are in the custody of that system, to determine whether they've been separated from someone who was legitimately their parent, or even for reuniting those parents with those children who may have been mistakenly separated from them in that process. The adults will face criminal charges if they're really prosecuting them for illegal entry or reentry, which means the adults would then be taken to jail and detention centers and incarcerated.
I want to compare what's going on now to what's gone on in the recent past. First of all, you said this is a zero-tolerance policy, meaning if someone tries to cross the border illegally, they're charged with a crime. What had we been doing at the border in the past in those situations?
Yeah, that's a great question. To give some context to this, I think what's really new about this strategy is the idea that we will be referring all crossings for prosecution in the criminal courts, which means even if the individuals are claiming asylum or have very small children with them, in the past, the Department of Homeland Security would sort of use discretion regarding which cases would be recommended for prosecution. So, for example, asylum seekers that were really claiming a well-founded fear of persecution, harm, or torture, they were often allowed to have their case play out in the immigration courts, which are administrative units rather than the federal criminal courts, before they would be recommended for prosecution, which means they could often be released, living with relatives or being monitored through technology or phone check-ins, but not being detained. Sometimes deportation was used without filing any criminal charges at all, just deporting those people back. And so that's one of the things that's really new here is this idea, first of all, that all the illegal border crossings will be referred for prosecution, you know, with criminal federal charges. And I think the second thing is just the amount of separation that's occurring. I think that I saw some recent reports where we have about 700 children, according to the Office of Refugee Resettlement data, that have been removed from adults that were accompanying them at the border since October. And I think about 100 of those children are even younger than the age of 4. And we've never seen anything like that in terms of the amount of separation of children.
Talking to Elise Cohen, Assistant Professor of Political Science at UW-Sheboygan and UW-Manitowoc, about U.S. border enforcement policy and a policy that leads to separation of children from their families when they are caught trying to cross the border illegally. Before we dig into more about the kids themselves, Elise, one point that the Trump administration has raised is that, okay, if someone or someone in their family has a legitimate grounds to apply for asylum, why not come in through the legally determined ports of entry, they call them, points of entry into the United States and apply for asylum instead of attempting to cross illegally at a different point?
Yeah, and so that's a great point. Some of these who are being detained actually did go to a port of entry. So it's a little misleading to suggest that they're only detaining those that have entered irregularly, not through the ports of entry. There are also those that don't really understand the port of entry system, so they may not be aware what the port of entry means. That would be like an airport or an official border crossing compared to some place that's outside of immigration and customs checkpoints. And so there may be also some that go through irregular entry points without fully understanding that they need to go to those specific locations to try and claim asylum. But we're seeing it's really both those that are going to the ports of entry and those that are going through irregular crossing zones that have been detained and have had children separated from them. And we have even seen lawsuits being brought from last year before this was a sort of formal policy to that effect.
On what grounds would lawsuits be filed here?
Yeah, there are a couple of dimensions where we see some legal concerns. In terms of federal immigration law, we have adopted and signed on to international legal treaties regarding the treatment of asylum seekers. One of the principles there is that we wouldn't be detaining asylum seekers because these are not to be treated as criminals before we've established whether they have legitimate grounds for asylum. So that's one aspect, is that we would be violating that legal principle that someone who's really seeking a refuge from torture or harm or violence is different than someone who is a criminal, and they should be treated differently, not placed in the same kind of detention environment as criminals. Another aspect relates also to the violation of children's rights. There have been even U.S. court cases establishing guidelines about the detention of children, and that all efforts should be made to keep children with their family members or with other guardians or relatives because of the child welfare implications in terms of long-term trauma, psychological damage, things like anxiety, depression that come not only from detention but from being separated from their family members.
Is that separation and detention, as far as we know, in violation of international law or of American law, for that matter?
Yeah, so what we see in terms of the international law is we have several treaties that we've signed on to. First of all, just regarding detention, we see that we're not supposed to be detaining asylum seekers as a general principle, that this is really something we should avoid unless it's a last resort. And if we are detaining asylum seekers, it should be on a case-by-case basis rather than a sort of blanket policy of everybody who is crossing irregularly, which would be, you know, illegally, that we will automatically detain them or automatically prosecute them. So that's the first aspect that's in violation of international law. The second aspect is if we are detaining them, they should be in humane conditions that are not criminal-like or jail-like conditions. But what we see is a lot of the detention centers are either former prisons and former jails or have been set up by private prison corporations very much on the model of a prison-like facility. So that's yet another way that we're sort of out of compliance with international law and the way that we're detaining these individuals.
The Trump administration, Homeland Security officials, including Kirstjen Nielsen from Homeland Security, have said if you are an American kid and your parent or parents commit a crime, they end up going to jail, in effect, you are being separated from your parents. You go into a system. Eventually, hopefully, they find you a guardian. This, they say, is no different. The parents are committing a crime and crossing the border, and unfortunate as it may be, that leads to them being separated from their kids. Is that a valid analogy?
Again, I think the emphasis that we would want to place on the asylum seekers and those that are seeking some kind of refuge, because we know a lot of the families, for example, that are coming across the border in these high numbers, they're coming from what's called the Northern Triangle region of Central America, so Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. And they're often fleeing things like kidnapping, torture, forced extortion, all sorts of really extreme violence. So they would meet the definition of refugee status, or, you know, what the U.S. law would refer to as an asylum seeker. They're seeking that status. And for that reason, we would want to make a distinction from someone who's an American citizen who has perhaps, committed a crime, and therefore their children end up in the custody of the state. So these asylum seekers under international law and our own law, since we have implemented those treaties in our own 1980 Refugee Act, we should not be treating those who are seeking that kind of refuge from those conditions in the same way we would treat someone who had a traditional criminal violation in the U.S. criminal justice system.
Elise Cohen is with us. She's an assistant professor of political science at UW-Sheboygan and UW-Manitowoc. She's with us to talk about the Department of Homeland Security's policy of separating children from their parents when families cross the U.S. border illegally. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this policy? Tell us why you support it or not. What do you think we should be doing? Do you have questions for our guest? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about a Department of Homeland Security policy that, in effect, separates children from their families as they cross into the U.S. illegally. Our guest is Elise Cohen, assistant professor of political science at UW-Sheboygan and UW-Manitowoc. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question for our guest? What are your thoughts on this policy? What should be in place at the border when it comes especially to families with children? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Email ideas@wpr.org. We'll go to your calls now. Steve is with us in Slinger. Steve, hi.
Hello. I guess my comment would be that something needs to be done about our border problem. And maybe if this would deter people from trying to come in, it would be worth it. I mean,
Steve, thanks for the call. So is this something, Elise, that, we've cracked down at the border. There's this risk of being prosecuted if you're caught, of being separated from your kids. Does this send a message that says, okay, don't try to come in here outside of normal procedures?
Yeah, that's a really great question that the caller raises, because I think it's really at the center of the logic of where this policy comes from. We know when it was first floated last year in about March or so of 2017, that was the logic that was being put forward. This is a way to be much more aggressive at enforcing border control, and this is something that might perhaps deter future potential illegal crossings. And so there's a couple of things on that. What we see when we have these in-depth interviews with the people that are crossing, especially the families, in those reports, is it doesn't seem that deterrence has much of an effect because of the circumstances they're fleeing. That's to say they're already so desperate that they're willing to endure and sacrifice whatever it takes, because especially those with children believe that they are trying to get their children to safety, and it's to preserve the lives and well-being of their children, which is why they are trying to safely take refuge in North America. The other aspect of that is kind of a legal dimension. We had a 2015 federal court ruling, a circuit court in D.C., that specifically said, from an Obama-era standpoint, that the idea of using detention to deter future potential illegal immigrants is illegal. So there could be a legality aspect around detaining immigrants which means one could imagine a legal aspect of separating families from children to deter. And I'm thinking that that is one of the reasons we see this link to federal prosecutions of actually committing the crime of illegal entry, as a way the Trump administration may be kind of anticipating the legal challenges that will come and have come in the past, that deterrence really is not legally valid.
Thanks a lot for that call. We'll go next to Brian with us in Bloomer. Brian, hi.
Hello, this is Brian here, working in Bloomer, Wisconsin. Where can we start? Professor, you're doing a wonderful job. I would like to say that the United States and its CIA forces created the miserable conditions that occur in Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua. They financed these guerrilla wars. Archbishop Oscar Romero begged President Carter to not support the oligarchy down in El Salvador. Carter refused to listen to what Oscar Romero was begging for. And so from there, we've got our hand in the mix that turned these Central American countries into uninhabitable places.
Brian, thanks a lot for the call. At least Brian saying we have some culpability, making the case anyway that the United States has culpability in the current conditions in Central America that are driving people to flee there to here.
Yeah, that's another really important dimension of this. As I mentioned, a lot of these families are coming from the Northern Triangle countries, and the U.S. does have a foreign policy history of involvement in those countries. I think your caller was referring to some of our Cold War policies about containing communism, and one of those was directly related to one of the Northern Triangle countries, Honduras, which ended up being a staging ground for the U.S.-backed Contras, this sort of right-wing rebel group that was fighting the Sandinista government in Nicaragua. So as part of that U.S. foreign policy, we saw a tremendous influx of militarization and weapons and the sort of structural conditions that have enabled the facilitation of violence in the region to this day. So there is some interesting ground to make for the U.S. bearing culpability, not only in the structural conditions of violence, but also because in the 90s we had some deportation policies that were sort of ill-advised. We didn't really address the root causes of the drug trafficking violence in that area, but ended up deporting a lot of criminals back to Central America that then established some of these gangs that we know infamously today, like MS-13 in El Salvador. And so we just sort of relocated the violence a bit more south, rather than addressing the root causes of that drug trafficking violence. I think the third aspect that's often made with U.S. culpability for this violence is just our massive export of firearms to Latin America in the past decades. And so there are some really interesting angles when you think about U.S. foreign policy involvement.
Brian, thanks for that call. We're talking to Elise Cohen, political scientist at UW-Sheboygan and UW-Manitowoc, looking at U.S. border policy, especially when it comes to separating children from their parents when they cross the border into the U.S. illegally. Back to your calls now. Nate is with us in Milwaukee. Nate, hi.
Hi. Thank you. I was going to say I don't agree with this policy. It sounds like, from what your guest said, we're actually treating people who try to legally claim refugee status as somehow criminals, and it reminds me of some of the things that the administration has said, attacking immigrants all over as somehow being bad and terrible. And I'll point to a Journal Sentinel article from May 8th this month in the Journal Sentinel, where a father and a business person that employed three people was deported when he tried showing up to traffic court to pay a ticket. And he had not had any contact with the legal system for years before that point, which means he was living generally a good, upright life in society here in Wisconsin, and we threw him out.
Nate, thanks a lot for that call. In our last few moments, Elise, can you connect this border policy, separating kids from families, with the wider issues of how the Trump administration has moved on asylum seekers and refugees?
Yeah, that's a great final point. I think this does connect with this concept of nativism, which is an intense opposition to immigrants or internal minorities on the basis that they're foreign and threatening. And I think this is one of those moments similar to the debates we had over resettling Syrian refugees during the election, that there's something about these migrants. They're not just people seeking refuge, but they're hostile foreign invaders coming to harm the real Americans. So I think it does come down to a large segment, or at least a significant segment of Americans today does tend to view migrants as something threatening based on fear and suspicion, sort of repeating some history moments that we've had with Catholics, Irish, Germans, Jews, those of Chinese and Japanese descent. So the historical context of nativism is a really great connection.
We'll leave it there for now. Elise, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks so much, Rob.
Elise Cohen is an assistant professor of political science at UW-Sheboygan and UW-Manitowoc. She joined us to talk about the Trump administration's policy that ultimately separates children from their parents after families cross the border into the country illegally.